You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Here it comes. And a drive to left. Grand slam time.
Len Casper.
That's Len.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, baby.
TV voice of the Cubs.
Hey, one other question about Chewbacca.
Yeah.
Does he still qualify for the Wookiee of the Year?
Slightly above average bassist.
Len Casper playing his part really into it.
Len Casper.
That's Len.
With Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you and see you in October. Len Casper is on Twitter, at Len Casper. He joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. That was a fun couple of days, Len, however you want to slice it, and no matter for which team one roots. That gave us a little bit of everything we wanted.
Yeah, I would agree. Jimenez with the big home run, it's hard not to acknowledge what a special moment that was for a young player who had been traded from one organization to the other. And then the game last night was also kind of weird, right? Lester gives up the home run on the first pitch. Contreras hits two home runs. The ball was flying all over the ballpark with the wind blowing in. I'm kind of with Joe. I don't know if a UFO landed and delivered all the baseballs. We've talked about this the past few weeks, but it's unbelievable how the ball is jumping out of just about every ballpark we see. And then Lucas Giolito, you were expecting him to deal last night, and I guess he was due for a bad one. It had been a couple of months since he looked quite as hittable as he was last night. Good to see the Cubs offense get it back. They had not been scoring a lot of runs. And you walk away with a 1-1 split, and the Cubs are back in first place.
Wilson Contreras was huge, obviously, last night with the grand slam in the first. He did not play in the first game. I'm kind of on the sideline of things like, you have to manage the innings behind the plate for him. I worry so much personally about catchers who are big parts of offenses because it's so physically demanding. It really sounds like they want to manage the workload as much and as often as possible for Wilson. Fan of that?
Huge fan of it. We talked about it about a month ago, and Joe really has made an effort to give him some days off now that we've gotten into the middle of the season. Fortunately, the weather has not really been oppressive, but he led the majors by far in innings caught last year, and you have to think that at least some of it, if not a lot of it last year in the second half, the big downturn offensively had something to do with him playing every day. Victor Caratini has been terrific, both behind the plate and with the bat, and I think that's given Joe an opportunity to get him in there to catch Darvish. He's caught Hamels a fair amount here lately, and I think it's paramount that Contreras does get rest, and the day after he has a day off, his numbers are eye-popping. So, you can't always do the cause and effect thing, but I think it's pretty obvious that when he gets a little rest, he's better at the plate.
Theo made it clear that, speaking of rest, it might not be the worst thing to add some breadcrumbs in the meatloaf when it comes to spacing out the opportunities for starting pitchers. We know that John Lester, at this stage of his career, sometimes is better off when you force him to take a little bit extra day to get some of his strength back. How do you foresee it going forward? If, in fact, I'm bad at assuming this, but if we assume that Kyle Hendricks will be back and okay from this impingement, when do you begin to really get careful with the usage of veteran starting pitchers?
It wouldn't surprise me with Alzolay coming up before the break that they may add a sixth starter. So I'm not totally sure that it's Chatwood's spot, and then maybe Alzolay takes it the next time, depending on how it goes tonight. It could very well be that if Chatwood pitches well, he makes two or three starts, and then they maybe slip Alzolay in there before the All-Star break. I think that they might leave open that possibility while Alzolay is here. And then beyond the break, I think the Cubs have 8. You might want to check. I think they have 8 off days in August or July. One of those 2 months, they have a lot of off days coming up. They haven't had those now, but I think it will ease up a little bit right after the All-Star break. September is pretty packed. So, you know, you want to make sure that you have everybody lined up for the most important month of the season, and it certainly looks like it's going to be a pretty tight race. But I think they will build in an extra day or two for just about everybody when they can.
So two things, Len. One, what does that mean then for Mike Montgomery? Is there a spot start for him, or as that other lefty, is he a guy that Joe would like to keep in matchup situations? And we talked to Taylor Davis just a little while ago on the show. Apparently it is Adbert Alzolay. There is no hard T at the end of this. Just, you know, keep it up to date with all the names we're going to have to go through on the broadcast here.
I love that. Thank you.
Here to help.
I definitely will confirm that. You want to get that right. I think Montgomery for now is in the bullpen, and, you know, everything is on the table in terms of him making a spot start down the road. But I think all else equal, I think Chatwood has more than earned the start tonight. And, you know, the Cubs without Cedeno, who's been on the injured list a couple of times, Tim Collins back and forth, and now off the roster again. Really, it's been Kyle Ryan and Mike Montgomery. We've seen a little bit of Randy Rosario, but I think Montgomery is too important as a left-hander in the bullpen right now than to be a starter.
I can't believe we're still talking about batting average with runners in scoring position, but this really flummoxes me, Len. I'm grasping for answers here, but now through multiple hitting coaches, multiple iterations of hitting infrastructure, different theories, different ideas, but the same core, these guys really struggle to stay themselves in important situations. They're still scoring runs. They're still winning games. But this bedevils me when it comes to this whole idea of clutch versus choke and everything and how it's all defined. But there's been some choke in this team.
It is hard to figure out. I generally, you know, come back to the you're either a good hitter or you're not. And this team has a lot of good hitters. You know, I trust Rizzo in big spots. I trust Bryant in big spots. Contreras has come up with some big hits. David Bote would be a guy you feel good about, even if the numbers don't say that he can come up with a big hit in a big spot. The bottom line is, other than the second half last year, under Joe Maddon, this has been a really good offense. And I don't know, big picture, what you do unless you simply replace some of those players, right? And it's been proven that the runners in scoring position thing is not a repeatable skill. You know, I mentioned last night Kyle Schwarber knocked in a run late with a double, but it was, I think, Addison Russell at first base. So he doesn't get credit for right. A hit with a runner in scoring position because the guy was at first, not at second base. Now, in Schwarber's case, he has not hit enough doubles. His slugging comes almost exclusively from home runs. So that is an area he definitely can improve. And he has not been good with runners in scoring position over the years, as we all know. So you always want to make that better if you can. Every team feels like it struggles in those less than two out situations. Get the guy in from third. But ultimately, I think you go with the offense you have, and I think it's one of the better offenses in this league.
So, Len, since getting shelled by Cincinnati, Yu Darvish has thrown 24 and a third. His ERA is 2.96. His batting average against is 167, apologies. And the slugging against is 2.86. I've been the guy telling everybody, you know, take the start you've got from Yu Darvish one at a time. But are you starting to see some connective tissue between these four starts, between this last month or so for Yu Darvish, who starts Friday against the Mets?
It's by far been his best stretch as a Cub. The fact that he's throwing strikes is huge. The stuff looks as good as it's been. The stuff generally looks really good. I just see a much more confident and relaxed guy on the mound. And maybe the start he had in Los Angeles last weekend, maybe that was the breakthrough. That was the one thing that he hadn't kind of crossed off his list. Actually, there are two things he hasn't crossed off his list. It was the Dodgers, which he did, and winning a game at Wrigley Field, which he still has not done. So once I think maybe he gets that out of the way, the sky's the limit. But it's been encouraging. The first thing this year was, is he 100% healthy? Knock on wood, that's been the case so far. And he just seems like a much more relaxed guy to be around. Year two always feels better for a free agent as a Cub. We've seen it with Tyler Chatwood, and we're seeing it a lot now with Yu Darvish, and that's a very positive sign. And with Hendricks out, we don't know how long. I think Darvish's contributions become even more important.
Cool thing about baseball is you get calls that happen rarely, and you have to be ready to deal with them by understanding the rules and knowing what's going on. And there were a couple in this series already. There was the interference that was called on Jose Abreu, where there were actually it was a technical double play that was called.
Strike three.
And we had Leury Garcia, who was hit by a batted ball, his own batted ball, outside the batter's box. And these are things that you have to apparently explain to people in real time. Take us through the situations.
Yeah, you know, I didn't quite get the Abreu one right off the bat. We eventually did. What made it unique is that it was strike three, so Abreu was already out. So he wasn't really penalized, but in an interference play, the batter is called out, but if it's strike three, the runner is automatically called out. On the follow-through, on an incidental follow-through where there's contact made on a play like that, that is actually not deemed interference, and they will send the runner back to first base. So we had to clarify that after the fact. Last night, the home plate umpire was, I'm blanking on who it was, but I think he got it wrong.
He was bad. I know that. Whoever he was doesn't know a ball from a strike.
And I think that is a call that is rarely made for a reason. Most guys, when that happens, it's almost impossible to be outside the batter's box. And it looked to us like Garcia still had one of his feet still very much in the box. And I think they simply got it wrong.
It was Corey Blazer.
Blazer, yeah.
And I don't understand. When you've got a crew like that, because that's Jeff Nelson and Laz Diaz as well, and like, I just don't know why home plate umpires, maybe embolden's not the right word, I don't know, but so many things are their call and their call only, like a check swing or anything like this. Just, you have three other guys helping you, use them.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And usually that call, when it is made and it is rare, is called by the home plate umpire. It's called pretty immediately. Mm-hmm. But when a guy, you know, bounces a ball near the plate and then takes off for first base and it hits him, the other team's manager or dugout will scream, you know, he should be out. And then almost every time you look at the replay and it's like, nah, he was still in the box. So I guess the fallback on that call is to never call it. And you're probably going to be right 99 out of 100 times.
I'm with you. It's like the opposite of a fumble in football where umpires and referees are right. Told, like, just call the fumble and then we'll get it right when we get a replay. Yep. The easiest way to do this is never call it and then we'll figure it out on replay.
Exactly right. And I'm not sure that's reviewable. I'd have to look it up. I'm not sure that is a reviewable call. It may be, but I have not seen it.
If it's not, I'm sure the umpires union will tweet something aggressive about it and how it ought to be called.
If it were reviewable, Ricky should have challenged it.
That's true.
What I am doing right now is I am declaring this series against the Mets to be a Theo Circle It series. I don't know if Theo is circling it, but when you're coming off this particular stretch against some good teams and then you get all of the emotions of the home series against the White Sox and the Mets come in, these are ones to win. I am grabbing Theo's pen out of his hand and I am circling these as should wins.
I think that's a pretty fair statement. The Braves come in next week. They're the best team in the East. That's a four-game series. You'd love to count on winning three out of four, but you can't always do that. You don't want a 5-5 homestand, so I'm with you, Dan. I think this is one you do circle and say, you know, you really need to win three out of four, which is not easy to do. They've got Jacob deGrom on Sunday. No-Noah Syndergaard, he's not pitching tonight. It'll be Walker Lockett. Jason Vargas tomorrow, Zach Wheeler on Saturday, but this is a Mets team that is at a critical point right now, and they're probably out of it, but they would have to go on a pretty impressive run to get back within shouting distance of even the wild card. So I think this is an important series for the Cubs to do a lot of damage. And the Brewers have their hands full this weekend. They've got the Reds, who are playing really good baseball, coming off a sweep at home over Houston. So, you know, if that's a 2-2 split and you win 3 out of 4, you create a little distance in the division.
All right, last question. I've decided that I only want to talk about baseball with people who have read The MVP Machine by Ben Lindbergh and Travis Sochik. Have you read it yet, and when will you read it so we can continue having baseball conversations?
Yeah, I've started reading it. I haven't finished it. I'm savoring it. I do have games to call every day, but
I don't care.
I'm probably 15% into the book, and it's outstanding. My favorite line from the book is, and I'm paraphrasing, not being stupid is way more important than being smart. And I totally love that. I think it's true.
We ought to get T-shirts.
Yeah. You don't have to be smart. Just don't be stupid.
All right. Well, you'll have it done by next week, and then otherwise we can't talk because that's the rule.
Fair enough.
Thanks, Len.
Thanks, Len.
Thanks, guys.
Len Casper.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.